Okay, we're starting here on the top of Nuntedim and Aleph, six lines down. B'chir Ba'ava ikla the Gavla. So B'chir Ba'ava went to a place called Gavla. The Bali Tosafot bring from the Oruch that the translation of Gavla in Aramaic actually turns out to be Har Seir. And he brings a number of examples of that, where the Aramaic translation of Seir and Har Seir is Gavla. But that would make it in a strange location that he was going over to Har Seir to visit. And therefore the Bali Tosafot in the end say, Mi'u l'fi ha'emet, truthfully, mashma yoter she'ir mi'eretz Yisrael, that it's a city inside of Eretz Yisrael. And based on the fact that he's interacting with Rabbi Yochanan, also makes it sound like it was somewhere near Tveria. So in the north somewhere, there was the city of Gavla. He saw that the Jewish girls, Jewish women there, were marrying and then getting pregnant from individuals who were non-Jews that had milah, that got a brit milah, but they did not have tevilah. As we already saw earlier, that malu velo tavlo means that they are not geirim. They are not considered to be converts at all. There's no such thing as a half-convert. And therefore, they are basically living together with an Oved Kochavim, and the child that is produced here is a product of an Oved Kochavim and a Bat Yisrael. Chaza Chamra D'mazgu Obdei Kochavim. He saw that the Oved Kochavim was diluting the wine for the Jews, Bishato Yisrael, and then they were drinking it. That goes to the last topic that we discussed yesterday, that the Amoraim suggested that one is not allowed to drink the wine that is diluted by the Oved Kochavim, not mi ikar adin, but rather just because there is lech lech. We say you should distance yourself from such activity because of the possibilities or the problems that could arise from that. Chaza to Musa, he saw a lupine, the shakli luhu Oved Kochavim, that the Oved Kochavim were cooking it up, v'achle Yisrael, and then the Jews were eating it, v'lo amar luhu v'lo midei. He didn't say a word to them. So in each of these three cases, it seems like there is a problem. And yet, he did not paskin anything. He did not say anything to them. After the kamei de Rabbi Yochanan, he comes to Rabbi Yochanan to discuss the matter. Amalei tzev achrei zal b'nehem shein mamzerim. Go announce about their children that they are mamzerim. Vayena mishum yayin nesech. And that their wine is considered to be like stam yenam yayin nesech. Valtur Masan and their lupines, Bishum Bishule Obdei Kochavim, the problem of Bishul Akum, Bishum She'enan B'nei Torah, because these people are not people who are steeped in Torah or follow the precepts of the Torah. Now the Gemara explains each one of these Piskei Halacha, and each one of them follows the position of Rabbi Yochanan. So here are three Piskei Halacha that all follow Rabbi Yochanan the Shita day, and we'll see that none of them are absolutely clear Piskei Halacha, and that's why Rabbi Chir Ba'ava probably desisted from saying anything, because he didn't know what the Halacha should be, and even if you do know the Halacha, there are those that might disagree with that Halacha. Al-Benehem Shei Mamzirim, the Paskin that their children are considered to be Mamzirim, Rabbi Yochanan L'Tameh. This is Rabbi Yochanan the Shita Do, Rabbi Yochanan in Yivamot, and speaking about this matter of intermarriage, says, that the individual is not considered to be a convert until he goes through the process of Mila and Tevila. Came into Lo Tovil, and since here he didn't have Tevila, he's classified as a non-Jew. We have a non-Jew, or an Eved Kanani, who's also classified basically as a non-Jew, that have a relationship with a Jewish woman, Havlad Mamzer. The product of that union is considered to be a Mamzer. So now, this is Rabbi Yochanan the Shittato, where he says that their children are Mamzerim. There are other opinions there in the Gemara in Yivamot that believe that even though the child is problematic, the child is not a Mamzer. And that's the way that we paskin, that intermarriage has one of two possible outcomes. If it's intermarriage where the woman is Jewish, the child is Jewish. Whereas if it's the other way around, where the woman is non-Jewish, then the child is non-Jewish. And even in the case where the woman is Jewish and the child is fully Jewish, there the Gemara speaks about the child is not your purest, quote-unquote, of products of children, but it's still not a mamzer. So those opinions disagree with Rabbi Yochanan, and that's very likely why Rabbi Chir Baba didn't say anything, because it's not clear that the children are classified as mamzerim. Rabbi Yochanan, the Shita Do, says they are mamzerim, and that's why he wants them to go and announce that their children are mamzerim, because they're a product of a non-Jewish man and a Jewish woman. And he says that they should declare that their wine is Yayin Nesech, Mishum. This is Rabbi Yochanan, the Shita Do from yesterday's daf, which is, we say, Lech Lech, Amrinan Nizira, Skor Skor, the Karma Loti Graf. We say, stay away from these items, because it could lead to problematic issues that arise. And yesterday's daf, we discussed the fact that if we allow them to be mosaic, we allow them to dilute the wine, there's a possibility that if he's doing it with water, which would not be problematic, he might come to do it with wine. That would be problematic. Or if he's diluting the wine, he could have the possibility that he touches the wine, which would be problematic. Or we discussed this possible problem of benotehim, that one should not be involved in socializing with the goyim. That's the gzeira of yeinam mishum benotehim. And that would be a classic case of socialization. If you allow him to dilute the wine, that would cause interaction between them. So for all of those possible reasons, we say, stay away from this. So Meikar Adin, if he dilutes the wine, meaning he pours the water into the wine is totally fine. So this is an Isur Midrabanan Mishum Har Choko. And that's again why Rabbi Chir Baba may not have paskened anything or said anything, because it's not a halacha that it's psuka. It's a halacha that it's really Har Choko. And that you have to have a belief that there is this Har Choko. And we saw yesterday that there were a number of Amoraim that suggested such, including Rabbi Yochanan. And that's why Rabbi Yochanan over here says that their wine is problematic. Their lupine is a problem of Bishul Akum, the fish in them b'nei Torah, because they are not people who are well versed in the Torah. Taima deinam b'nei Torah. From there you read midayek that this she'enam b'nei Torah, first of all, is only on that last case. And number two is you read midayek, it's only because they are not well versed in the Torah. Ha b'nei Torah shari. Had they been well versed in the Torah, it'd be totally mutar. V'amar Rav Shmuel bar Rav Yitzchak, amar Rav, kol she'nechal k'mot shu chai. Anything that's eaten in its raw state does not have an issue of bishul akum, implying that anything that requires cooking would have a problem of bishul akum. And here, the case of the lupines, they cannot be eaten in their raw state. Gemara in other places speaks about the fact that you have to cook the lupine numerous times. You cook it to take out the bitterness from the lupine. So the first time you cook it, it soaks out the bitterness. You pour out that water, and then you cook it again. And the Gemara speaks about even cooking it several times until it softens and sweetens by taking out whatever chemical it is that makes it bitter. And in that way, you prepare it to be able to be eaten. But that means in its raw state, it's not edible. And then you cook it, that's going to be classified as bishul akum. And here you have a problem of bishul akum. Not just because she ain't a b'nei Torah, even if they were b'nei Torah, it would be a problem. Bishlakom Yochanan kihach lishna svirle. He holds like the other lashon that we saw back in Lamed Chedam at Aleph about bishlakom. Amar Rav Shmuel bar Rav Yitzchak. Amar Rav kol she'enu ole l'shulchan melachim lafet bo tapat. Anything that does not go on the table of a king in order to accompany the bread, ein bo mishum bishulei obdei kochavim. Then it's not a problem of bishlakom. As Rashi notes over here, lupine is not eaten when it's raw. So according to the first lashon, that would be a problem, bishul akum, because you cook it and make it edible. But it also is not served on the table of a king. And so therefore, according to that second lashon, it would not be bishul akum, because even if you cooked it, it still wouldn't be in a type of food that would be classified or significant enough that you'd put it on the shulchan melachim. So therefore, taima deinam b'nei Torah. Because they were not b'nei Torah, that's why he was gozer. Ha b'nei Torah, sorry. Had they been b'nei Torah, it would not have been classified as bishul akum. The Baal Yad Tosafot over here, in summary, say what they say back on Lamed Chet Amud Aleph, and that is the Rabbeinu Tam believes that the second Lashon over here is not exclusive of the first Lashon. The way the Gemara reads over here, it sounds like two Lashonot are mutually exclusive. That is that either you think bishul akum is governed by whether it's edible in its raw state or not edible in its raw state, or it's governed by whether it is brought on the table of the king or not brought on the table of the king. Each one independent of the other. That means that if you hold like one lashon, you don't hold like the other lashon. Rabbeinum Tam, based on the Gemara back in Lamed Chet Amud Aleph, says that that's not true. That the second lashon of Shulchan Melachim accepts that which the first lashon said, which is, if it's Nechal Chai, there is no Bishul Akum. He's adding on top of that. Even if it's not Nechal Chai, even if it's not eaten in its raw state, if it doesn't go on the king's table, then it's not Bishul Akum. So he has both qualifications. So in order for it to be a sur, according to that second lashon, the Rabbeinu Tam says, it both has to be something that is not eaten in its raw state, and number two is that it's put on Shulchan Melachim. Those two things together would make it Bishul Akum, otherwise it would not be Bishul Akum. Over here from this Gemara, there's no reason to say that, and actually the Gemara reads almost opposite of that, which is that it seems like they're independent positions. But if you go back to the Gemara, Lamed Chet Amud Aleph, the Gemara says, Ma'ika ben Hayu, what's the nafka mina between these two lishonot? And it brings a couple of examples over there. All of those examples over there have a similar quality. They were not significant enough to go on a king's table, but they were not eaten in their raw state. And those were the nafkamina between them. And what the Rabbeinu Tam points out over there is that the Gemara never brings the opposite scenario. Doesn't bring examples like dvash, which would be something that is ole al shulchan melachim, but is eaten chai. It is eaten in its raw state. Because that also should be a nafkamina between them. The fact that the Gemara never brings that example shows you that everybody agrees that if it's nechal chai, if it's eaten in its raw state, that that's not considered to be a shalakum. That means both according to the Lishna Kama and the Lishna Batra, they both agree that that's a given. That if it is nechal chai, that's not bishalakum. The second lashon comes in hands on top of that. Even if it isn't eaten chai, if it is not oleh shulchan melachim, then it's also not considered a bishul akum. And those are the examples that the Gemara brings as the nafkamina between them. Only cases where it's not eaten raw, but it also doesn't go on the table of the milachim. The fact that the Gemara only brings examples in one direction, from that the Rabbeinu Tam proves that everybody agrees with the first lashon. The second lashon is adding on an additional kula to the first lashon, not coming to be exclusive of the first lashon. And since Rabbi Yochanan paskins like the second lashon, we follow that, because Rabbi Yochanan versus Rav, halacha Rabbi Yochanan, and both lashonot are in the name of Rav, but Rabbi Yochanan's clearly favoring the second lashon. Based on the Rabbeinu Tam's comment, you put those together, it means that that's the way we paskin with regards to the Bishul Akum, that you need both items to be true in order for it to be Bishul Akum. It means that both is Einu Nechal Chai, it's not eaten in its raw state, and it's Oleh al Shulchan Melachim, that it's served before kings. And that's why, over here, it was not Bishul Akum, because the turmus may not be eaten raw, but it's also not served to kings. And given that, it wasn't Bishul Akum, but because these people were not well versed in the Torah, he wasn't willing to let it go because they don't understand the nuance or the differences, and therefore they're going to be Matir or Bishul Akum, because he allowed them to eat the lupine in that case. What is the din as regards to an Ovei Kochavim carrying the grapes to the press? Amar lahu, asur. You said that it's problematic. Not inherently problematic, but again, mishum lech lech, amrina nizira, schor, schor, lekarma loti krav. We say to him, go, the nazir, don't go through the vineyard, go around the vineyard, don't get close, don't take a risk. And similarly over here, there's a risk of a problem if we allow him to carry the grapes to the press. Eitvei Rav Yemer the Rav Kana. Rav Yemer challenges Rav Kana. Ube kuchavim. Shevi anavim the gat b'salim. Ube dorim. If he brings these grapes to the press in a basket or in a dor dorim, which Rashi claims are gigiot tanot, small casks or small barrels that he's bringing in. Vapo pisha yain mizalef alehem. Even though the wine is spilling on them, mutar, it's totally fine. That would be in opposition to what we just saw from Rav Kahana, who said it was a sur. Here you have a braita saying that it's totally mutar. Amalei, evi kamart? Wait a minute. The Lashon HaBraita is very different than what I'm saying. The braita says, if he did bring it, this is the din. Ana lechatchila kamina. I didn't say to you that it's a sur legamre. You're asking me if you have to make a decision whether you should do this or not do this. I'm telling you, don't do this. It's a sur. L'chatchila, if you come and ask me, should the goy do this? We'll say no. The Braita is addressing, if the goy did it anyway, what's the din? And b'diavad, it is mutar. And that goes to the fact that the Isser is only an Isser of lech lech, which means that it's only an Isser derabanan of harchaka. So if you ask me what to do up front, I'll tell you, stay away from this, because it could lead to other problems. On the other hand, if he already did it, then in and of itself, that's not an Isser, because it was only harchaka. So that means that the yayin is fine, or is mutar in the end, because he didn't do anything wrong. The big problem you have here, is the question that you asked, is, what's the case here? What happened over here? There's no explanation of the Gemara as to what the problem is. And Rashi himself is silent on the issue. He doesn't comment on what the problem is. We have similar cases in other places in Shas with regards to Hekshir Tuma, which is as Machloket Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai in the Mishnayot, with regards to if you are picking grapes and you put them in a basket and then the grapes are exuding liquid from them. That liquid then is washing the grapes in the basket. Do we classify that liquid as being a liquid that he wants, and therefore it's makshir the kabel tuma, or is it not makshir the kabel tuma because it's not a liquid that he wants? So that is the qualification. In order for you to prime a food for the acceptance of tuma, it has to be washed by a liquid, and the liquid has to be something you want. Now, the Mishnayot deal with what it means you want. It can mean that you want the liquid, it can mean that you want the result of the liquid, but you need some sort of ratzon over here. And there, Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai argue about this fact. They both agree that if the basket is sealed and it can't drip out, that there's a problem. Because then the wine that collects there will be put into the press and will be something that he captures. But here we're speaking about a basket that has holes in it, that when the wine drips out of that, then what do we consider that wine? So Beit Hillel says it's going the ibud. He doesn't care about that liquid. It's actually a negative for him because he's going to lose the liquid that's coming out. Therefore, he doesn't want it. Shammai says that he does want that liquid or that wine that comes out, and it is makshir the kabel tuma. So that's something similar that we have in another place in Shas. And through that, the Rashbam, brought in the Balei Tosafot, suggests that that's what the problem is over here. It says, Rashbam Perish, v'zeh l'shono, k'shebutzrim ha'nevim notim otam v'salim l'odicham l'gat, pick the grapes, you put them in the basket to take them to the press. Mit ma'achim v'nichbashim anavim zel ze. They crush each other. They soften each other, causing v'yayin mizalef. And then the wine spills out or comes out from those grapes. U'matilin otam begat. And then you dump them into the press. Ma'u sheyolichim ovei kochavim begat. Is the non-Jew allowed to carry that to the press? Is the wine that is being exuded by these grapes or being squeezed out of these grapes, even though it's unintentional because you're not really pressing the grapes, it's just from the pressure of them sitting on each other, or because they start to soften up when they are together, then that's what's causing the wine to be exuded. Is that classified as wine or not? So then why does it matter whether he takes them to the press or not? The question is not about the press. The question is about the liquid that's found with the grapes. Lomi bayile. Im yachol iten anavim betoch gat. He says that the question is not about whether you can or cannot put them into the gat, because im yesh yayin nimshach hasur, and he touches it, it'd be problematic to dump it into the gat. Im ein yayin begat, shitule denotein betoch gat anavim ve'no choshesh. If there's no wine in the gat, then there's no question about putting it in there. So that the haida nakat or chod the milka nakat. The reason it's speaking about dumping it into the gat, that's the normal way. That's when you normally carry these grapes or come into contact with these liquids. So the gat is not relevant to the case at all. What the question is the liquid exuded by these grapes, is that classified as a liquid? Or is it not classified as a liquid? Here it's important that it's not just a liquid, it's classified, is it classified as wine? When the goy touches it, it's problematic. If it's not classified as wine, then when he touches it, it's like touching water, which would not be an issue. That's what the Rashbam says the question is, and that's what's being addressed in the case here. On the other hand, the Balei Tosafot say that that doesn't make so much sense. Vekasho, he says, number one, has nothing to do with carrying the grapes. All it has to do with is whether he's touching the liquid or not touching the liquid. Not only does it have nothing to do with the gat, with the press, like the Rashbam said, but also has nothing to do with carrying it. It has nothing to do with moving it from one place to the other. It has to do with whether he touched the liquid or he didn't touch the liquid. So the question seems to be totally irrelevant to the problem that's at hand. The problem is maga, touching the oikokavim. Why are we talking about holacha and the gat? which are completely irrelevant details to the story. The wine that is exuded by these grapes, or is squeezed out of these grapes, is clearly not Yayin Netzach, because it is water. That we already know, even according to the Mishnah Achrona that we learned previously. The Mishnah Achrona says it doesn't get the status of wine, Achi Mashech, and still starts to flow. The wine has to flow from the area where it's pressed towards the bor, but that's when it becomes, or gains the status of Yayin, that it becomes the Yayin Netzach. Before that point in time, it's not classified as Yayin. So certainly over here, where before you're in the press, and it's just exuding this liquid, that's clearly not Yayin Netzach. V'od, kasha mashrutzer Rashbam lechalek, ben mezorek kenegdol uzorek melachok, techilib zelo matzanu. So then, he also is faced with a separate problem, which is the Gemara further on, speaks about the fact that if you have a chavit that is spilled into the bor, and he's holding on to that, and he's pushing the barrel into the gat, and there's a problem with that. And over here, it suggests that there is no problem with that. So he has to distinguish between how it's put in there. And the way the Rashbam does that is because it depends on how far away he is from the press when he's putting it in. Is he further away or closer to the press? And that type of differentiation in Zrika will make a difference in the halacha. Baal Tosfot say, never heard of such a thing. Where do you find that if you throw it from close, it'd be problematic? You throw it from far away, it's not problematic. We never find such a distinction. For all of those reasons, the Baal Tosfot think that the Rashbam's explanation is incorrect. It's a case where the gat is already flowing. There's wine in the gat in the press, and it's already begun to flow towards the bor. If it doesn't start to flow, there's nothing to speak about. And carrying it without throwing it in, also there is no problem at all. The problem here is, he's taking these grapes and then dumping them into the press. Is it problematic? Now here it could be problematic for a number of reasons. The Baalei Tosafot bring one reason. Other Rishonim pick up on the Baalei Tosafot's explanation and give a similar but slightly different explanations. He says the problem is, the Sur Davi Kamo must go obeku chavim. It's as if he's diluting the wine. Because the problem is that he might touch the wine. Odima lo dami the mazgo of the kuchavim, the atam idaktek of the kuchavim the mazgo. Because over there he's being very careful about the measurements of what he's putting in, ki ra'oi, to make sure that it comes out correctly. Deshe ra'oi lishtia, avahocha lo, odima lo shna. So Tosafot says the question here is when he dumps it into the gat, do we look at it as dumping into the gat as if he's creating a dilution of the wine? Now, it's obviously not dilution of wine. Could claim that it's wine and wine, but there's really no wine here because he's taking grapes and dumping them into the gat. Why it looks like the problem of mazgo is because mazgo itself wasn't problematic. When you dilute the wine, we said before that that dilution is mutar legamre. The chachamim goes there not to do it because of what we fear might happen. One of those fears is that he might touch the wine or come into contact with the wine. So is this the same? When he's dumping the grapes into the gat that's already flowing, do we worry about the fact when he's throwing the grapes in that he also might come to touch the wine, and that would be problematic? Or do we say that it's far enough away? The difference being that when he is trying to dilute the wine, he's trying to get to a very exact measurement. He's doing something in a very careful, measured manner, and if he's doing that, it's more likely that he'll come into contact with the wine because he's micromanaging it. In this case, he doesn't really care about the proportions of what he's dumping in as versus what already is in the gat to what's flowing from the gat. He just tosses in the pile of grapes. So maybe over there we don't worry about him touching it because it's like a macro scenario. It's right from a distance where he's throwing it in and he doesn't really care about the result of what's in there in the gat. Maybe he won't touch it, or maybe we say the fact that he could touch it and he's coming into close contact with it. One case, he's pouring water into the wine. Over here, he's pouring grapes into the wine. Maybe those are similar in nature, and there should be a gzeirah. That's how the Baalei Tosafot explain it. The Raifut and the Ramban take off on this Baalei Tosafot. The Baalei Tosafot compare it to a case of Niziga, but the Ramban just says simply there might be a problem of Nigia, of simply coming into contact with the wine that is there, and that's the issue that we are worried about. The Baalei Tosafot think that it's Domeh le Niziga, But the truth is, it's not mezigah, and mezigah is just a problem of something else that could happen or could come because of that. The Ramban just says it straight out, that it's a problem that he might come into contact with it, or it looks like something else that we're doing, that the Ravid suggests, it's as if you're pouring wine. And we know that pouring wine, the koach of the goy, is a problem that we already saw in yesterday's daf. And over here, when he's pouring the grapes into the gut, he also has liquid in there, it looks like he's pouring wine. So again, mi'ikar adin, it would not be a sore, but maybe there's a problem because of the fact that it looks like you're shofech yayin l'tocha gut. And that would be the problem over here. And that could be even when the gut is closed, that it would be a problem according to the Ravid. So they say the problem here is a problem that is not about the basket and the grapes themselves, it's about the gut that is flowing, that has the possibility of becoming yayin nesech. His interaction with that when he pours the grapes from the basket or the barrel into the gut. And now, the Bali Tosafot are a little bit of a bind, because based on what we said before, that it's mezek, that you're not allowed to dilute it, by dilution we never made a distinction between l'chatchila and b'diavad. Well, there we said it's a sore whether he did it l'chatchila or he did b'diavad. Rabbi Yochanan Paskin about the yayin of the people of Gavlo, that it was a sore because they had goyim that were diluting it. So over here too, it should be Asur the Gamrei. Why do you distinguish between the Chatchila and Bidiyavad? And in tomorrow's daf, we're going to learn that if you throw something, then it's not even Asur Bishtia. But here, since the God already started to flow, that makes it that it is somewhat similar to Mizigah. But it says that over here, since it's not completely like Mizigah, so therefore they did not make it as Asur as Mizigah. Now that could be for a number of reasons. If you think the problem of Mizigah is a problem of socialization, then over here it's less relevant, this issue of socialization, because it's not about the drinking of the wine, here it's about the preparation of the wine. So therefore you could understand maybe why they made a distinction. It might be even harder to understand why this is even relevant to that case. If you think the problem is maga, he's coming into contact with the wine, or the possibility that he would be pouring wine instead of water into the gut, then you can understand why the cases are somewhat similar, but they're still not completely similar. Over here, it seems to be a more distant problem than the problem of Mizigah, where he's in real contact with the wine and he's in a micro-measured situation. Over there, there's more a problem that could come up, and therefore over there they said it was Asur the Gamrei. Over here, they say it's Asur the Chatchila, Bidiyavad, it's okay. Now, the Braita that they bring also includes Shayayin Mizaleif Aleihem, that the wine is sprinkling on them. Now, according to both of them, explanations, it's a little bit difficult. Because the yayin mizaleif aleihem makes it sound like the wine is sprinkled on top of the grapes. The Rashbam explains the yayin mizaleif aleihem means that they are exuding liquid or they are dripping liquid. And over here, for the Bali HaTosafot, a yayin mizaleif aleihem does not necessarily make so much sense. It has nothing to do with whether the wine is on the grapes that he's bringing, but rather, the yayin mizaleif aleihem is really speaking about the gut, that the gut is flowing, or that the gut is moving. That is where the problem is. It's not a problem of the grapes themselves, that they're exuding liquid. It's the mere fact that he's pouring the grapes into a gut that is moving. And that's a more difficult reading of the language of the Gemara, whereas the Rashbam is faced with problems as to why the question was asked about holacha and about a gut. The two pieces of information are irrelevant to the Rashbam's question, which is all about the liquid exuding from the grapes. The other hand, for the Bali Tosafot, he can explain why holacha the gut is important, because that's the only problem here, but the mizaleif is a little harder for him to explain in the language. So now, the Gemara brings an additional case. How etroga, nafal chavita dechamra, there was this etrog that fell into a barrel of wine. Idre oved kochavim. The oved kochavim jumped up Vishakle, and went to grab the etrog before it sunk to the bottom of the barrel. He wanted to catch it so that it didn't get to the bottom, because then it'd be difficult to fish out. So now he sticks his arm in to grab the etrog. It's not clear whether it's his etrog, it was the Israel's etrog. Whatever he did, he jumped up and quickly went to grab the etrog. What do you do in this situation? You have a huge problem now. The guy is saving the etrog, but meantime he's got his arm in your wine. His arm being in your wine can cause significant problems for you. How do you prevent that problem from happening? So Amar lo Rav Ashi, naktua liyadei. Hold on to his hand. Secure his arm, or secure his hand, that he can't move it at all. Okay? So he is unable to do shikshuk, which would cause it to be yayin nesef, and that's the problem of stam yeinam. Ubertzua ad the shayfa. And then you should tilt the barrel and pour the wine out of that barrel until it is smooth or until it is below his hand. So what you do is you secure his hand and you don't allow him to raise his hand out of the barrel or out of the wine that is submerged in. The hand that is holding the etrog is submerged in the wine. So you secure the hand below the surface. Don't let him raise the hand and take it out of there. And then what you do is you pour off the wine from the barrel. You tilt the barrel and pour off the wine. And that way the wine will drop below the level of his hand, but he can't move his hand because his hand is secured below the level of the wine. The Rashi says the reason for that is, as long as his hand is submerged in the wine, if he takes it out, it would be impossible to guard against him doing some movement of his fingers that would cause a problem of yayin esef. Even if you're holding on to him, that's such a minute movement that you're not going to be able to control for that. So therefore, if you pour it out and keep his hand submerged, he can't do anything about it, because as long as his hand is submerged, he can't do shikshuk. And as Rashi notes over here, that the shikshuk would actually bring about the isur hana'ah. In the magav, the goy only causes a problem of ishur shtiyah. The shikshuch makes it into an iser hana'a. And so what you want to prevent over here is the possibility of there being any shikshuch in order to stop there being a problem of iser hana'a. So that's Rashi's explanation as to what the efforts being done here are for and what the solution to the problem is. The fear is that he's going to pull his hand out. As long as his hand's submerged in the yain, he can't do shikshuch, because he can't then dedicate or move his fingers to dedicate some of this wine to yain nesech because it's submerged in the wine. So he has to take it out in order to do that. As long as you secure it below the surface, he can't do that. Then you pour the wine out, he can't do anything about it because he's not moving his hand above the surface. The surface is dropping below his hand. That's how Rashi solves the problem. On the other hand, the Balei HaTosafot suggests that this is more similar to the case before where an individual submerged his arm into the wine in order to measure the wine. So he's using his hand to measure it. So over there we said that Rav was willing to say that it is mutar b'hana'ah and only asur b'shtiyah. So this would be similar in nature, which is that he's preoccupied with doing something. In the case here, he's preoccupied with grabbing the etrog and stopping the etrog from sinking. Similar to when he submerges his arm to measure the wine, there he's also preoccupied in that, and therefore he doesn't have the state of mind or the capacity to do shikshuk because he's focused on something else. Now, the difference in the cases is, in the case where he's already secured the etrog, then on his way out, he could be mishakshech, because now he no longer is preoccupied with saving the etrog because he got it. He has it in his hand. So that preoccupation now is left. It could be that he never secured the etrog, and therefore it's even more clear that when he's pulling his arm out, he has nothing to do with the etrog anymore. Or even if he did catch the etrog, on the way out, he no longer is worried or preoccupied. Then when he's measuring the yayin with his arm, he's preoccupied the whole time. The measurement is both from the perspective of him submerging it, but even on the way out, he's got to keep track of where that wine was, and he is preoccupied throughout the whole process. So since he was preoccupied throughout the whole process, that makes it that it would not be asur, because it's basically a maga shelo bikavana. It's basically a touching of the wine unintentionally. It's not really unintentionally. He knows it's wine, and he's doing it intentionally, but he's preoccupied, so that's what saves you in those cases. Over there, he's preoccupied from beginning to end. That would save it completely. Over here, he's only preoccupied on the entry. He's not preoccupied on the exit. So what you do is you secure his arm, and then you pour the wine out so that he doesn't have the ability to do shikshuk or ruin the yayin, because you've now stopped him from doing any more movement. He was preoccupied on the way in, now he's somewhat, quote-unquote, preoccupied on the way out, because you're holding his hand. He can't do anything, he can't move it, and therefore he can't focus on the nisuch yayin, and then you pour out the wine. Balei HaTosafot think that the problem with hana'ah has to do with intent, meaning that maga shelo bikavanah results in nisur shtiyah, but maga bikavanah results in nisur hana'ah. And so what we're trying to prevent over here is a maga b'kavanah. The entry was shelo b'kavanah, which only generates an ishur shtiyah. The removal of the hand would be b'kavanah, because there already has his wits about him because he's not preoccupied with any other object. And that makes it the problem that there could be an Isur Hana'ah because now he has kavanah to touch the yayin, not simply that he's involved in some sort of action that happens to get him in contact with the wine. There is a third view that is brought here. Beinu tam perish behalcha b'achnasad eyad sabor sheishal shemen. That on his way in, he thought it was oil. So he didn't know it was yayin, and we already saw a case like that before with the anas of the charam, who stuck his arm in thinking it was shemen, then it's not a problem because he didn't think it was wine to make it into a nisuch or a shikshuk in that case. And that's similarly over here, that he is a case where he thinks it's oil when he goes in there to grab the etrog. And the Rashbam gives the other pshat that we mentioned before, which is that it isn't that it is oil, or he thought it was oil, but his preoccupation on entering the yayin makes it similar to the case of oil, which is that he has no intent when he's going in to touch it for the purposes of nisuch hayayin because he's doing or engaged in something else. But once he's got the etrog, then you have to worry about what he's focused on or what he has the clarity of mind to deal with. Right, so over here you have a non-Jew who grabbed the wine of a Jew, and then it was menasechet intentionally. You can't now sell it to another non-Jew. It's asur b'shtia, asur b'hana'ah. Asur b'hana'ah means that you can't sell it in order to get the money back. He poured your wine. He made it into yayin nesech. You don't have a choice now. You have something that's asur b'hana'ah. You can't sell it off because you can't get hana'ah from it. Nevertheless, shorta d'mishkal d'mei mehahu oved kochavim. You are allowed to collect the money from that non-Jew who made it into yayin nesech. My taima, the reason being, mikla kalyo, because he destroyed it. He obliterated he basically eliminated the wine. So what we're seeing here, and as Rashi explains this, is there's a difference between selling wine and receiving restitution for nezek damage that was done. So in the case where the Yovi Kuchavim goes and makes it into yayin nesech, he has actually damaged your property. If he damaged your property, he should be responsible for the fact that he damaged your property because he caused you a significant loss in the fact that you're unable now to sell it. So in terms of selling it, you have a problem because it is Isurei Hana'ah. On the other hand, if you sell it to that goy, yes, that should also be included under the Isurei Hana'ah, but there's also another aspect of this. It's not an issue of Hana'ah. You're not selling it to him. He's actually compensating you for the damages that he did over here. And that is considered to be mutar, because that's reparations or restitution, and not a sale whereby you are garnering hana'ah from the wine. Over here, you're just receiving compensation for the fact that he destroyed your wine. And that's why it is mutar. Now, even though the hezek that is done here, the damage is done here, is what's called hezek she'enu nikar. It's hezek that is not noticeable or discernible in the item. There's no change in the physical properties of the item. He has yayin before, and he has yayin afterwards. And he can say, here's your wine back. Even though now there's a halachic change in the yayin, there is no physical change in the yayin. In the Gemara and Bava Kama, we have a machloket about hezek sheinu nikar. In the end, we paskin that hezek sheinu nikar is not considered to be hezek. Einu shmei hezek. It's not considered to be hezek, and you cannot demand compensation. But the Gemara there does say that that's if he did it b'shogeg, if he did it unintentionally. If he did it b'mezid, he does it intentionally, the Chachamim imposed a knas, a fine on him, that he has to make compensation and restitution, because otherwise people go around causing these problems to their friend's property whenever they're upset at them, whenever they want to get even with them. They'll destroy, quote-unquote, their friend's property by doing these halakhically problematic actions towards the item, which is a hezek sheinu nikar. There's no change in the physical properties, just in the halachic standing of this product, and then they won't be chayav. So Chazal in that case said, when you do it b'mezid, when you do it intentionally, then you are chayav eknas. And that might be the reason why the case that Rav Ashi brings says b'kavana, that he did it intentionally. The intent over here is important because that intent makes it that it's hezek sheinu nikar b'kavana. And given that, there is a knas, a fine that's imposed. That fine would then make it that it's restitution, compensation for the damage that's done, and not a sale. And that's why it would be permitted in this case. So then he says, Amar Rav Ashi mina aminola, I can prove that to you from the following braita, the Tanya. Uvei kochavim shenasach yeno shel Yisrael, shelo bifnei abudat kochavim asur. If a non-Jew does nisuch hayayin of Yisrael not in front of avodah zarah, then it's problematic. Rabbi Yehuda ben Pova, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira matirim. Both of them say that it is fine. Mishum shnei dvarim. There are two reasons why it's not problematic. Echad she'ein menaschim yayin el bifnei avodat kochavim. Number one, nisuch hayayin is only considered nisuch hayayin when you do it in front of the idol, in front of the item that you are worshipping. It can't be that it's drawn out of context and it has any meaning. Nisuch hayayin is only in a context that it has meaning. Outside of that context, it has no meaning. Vechad shomer lo, lo kol heminach, shete asur yini lo umsi. What right do you have to make my stuff asur? It's my stuff. You don't have a right to make it asur. Now the truth is, halacha, we disagree with both of these points. We think both of these issues are not true. Number one is that we believe that nisuch hayayin is a problem anywhere, like the Tana Kama. And number two is, we do have a principle that we saw before, that ein adam oser davar shenu shelo. Person does have a right to make someone else's property asur, but that's as long as they don't take action. They don't have a maaseh that they're doing on the item. If they take action on the item, like we saw before, if he shechs the animal with the intent for avodah zarah, even though it's not his, he makes the animal asur because he took an action. Similar over here, where he's bimenasech leyayin, he's taking action with the wine, that is problematic. That can cause the yayin to become asur, even though it's not his to make asur. So we don't paskin like either of these views that are brought by Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava and Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira. But yet, Rav Ashi is bringing a proof, seemingly, from their position. And that's what Rashi says. Even though we don't paskin like these, the Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava and Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira, to permit you to sell it to another non-Jew, nevertheless, it still is enough to say that from that goy himself, you can take restitution because you don't have a right to destroy someone else's property. So Rashi sees that the logic that is presented by them, even though it's not accepted the halacha, the application of that logic makes it or helps you to understand what Rav Ashi is saying. Rav Ashi says, may not pass like Rav Yehuda ben Bava, we may not pass like Rav Yehuda ben Teira, but nevertheless, from them you see that there is such a concept that you could say to someone, you don't have a right to destroy my property. You don't have a right to make my property into Isurei Hana. Even though that claim doesn't work, the fact that you raise that logic, in our case, would also create a distinction between whether it was selling it to that goy himself, selling it to another goy, as to whether it's deemed to be compensation, or is it deemed to be a sale. Now, the problem in Rashi is that the logic just doesn't flow through at all. It's a very difficult logic, which is that if you reject conceptually the idea of lo kol heminach, that it's not your right to make it asur, and you do have a right to make it asur, then how can you apply it, in our case, to say that lo kol heminach, that you don't have a right to make it asur, therefore I can take compensation from you. We rejected that concept completely. If we don't accept it, how can you then try to apply it in a different context to say, oh yeah, that logic applies? It's very difficult, Rashi is saying, and therefore many of the other Rishonim suggest that what is being said over here is not that they learned Rabbi Yehuda ben Matan, Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, rather it is telling us something about the Rabbanon's position. You can see that in the Baalei Tosafot. From their position, we can understand the Rabbanon, the Pligi Alei, Shelo Yachmiru Kol Kach Lasor Af Loto Oved Kuchavim Shnascho. So what he's saying is, from Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava and Rabbi Yehuda ben Matan, who seem to say that it's mutar, and their mutar means mutar b'ana'a, and even seemingly mutar b'shtiyah, it's completely mutar. The Chachamim say it's asur. The Chachamim say it's asur. They're doing that in opposition to the two Rabbi Yehudas. So if they're both Rabbi Yehudas say that it's mutar legamrei, the Chachamim come along and say it's asur, they're not saying that it's asur legamrei no matter who you sell it to, but rather it's asur, but depending on who you sell it to, you might come up with a different outcome. So that's how he learns it. The Ramban is bothered by both explanations, because again, by Rashi, there's no logical extension. And according to the Baalei Tosafot, how do they know that the Tanakhama's position is this way, In contrast, Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava and Rabbi Yehuda ben Viteira, there's no indication that that's the view of the Tanakhama. But rather, he says it is a derivative of both of their positions. Because you can say, Mimonavshach, if you hold like Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava and you hold like Rabbi Yehuda ben Viteira, then it's Mutar Lagamre, and there should be no problem from taking compensation for the damage that the Goy did. And then if you hold like the Chachamim think it's Asur Lagamre, and that means that he did cause damage. And since he caused damage, then you can make a claim for damages. And so what Rav Ashi is pointing out is that in either case, no matter who you paskin, like in the Braita would allow you to take money from this Goy. Rabbi Yehuda ben Viteira, Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava would allow you to take money from anyone. So of course you can take it from the Goy who did the damage. And according to the Tanakhama, maybe he won't let you take it from anybody else, but it's clear according to him that it's also the Gamre. And if it's also the Gamre, you cause Nezek, and Nezek can be compensated for. And that's the proof from the Braita. Now the Rashbam, Perish, the Rav Ashi lo aiti miltayu ala smachta de lo kol eminach. The Rashbam says that, you know what, he's not learning from Rabbanan. He's also not learning from Yehuda ben Betein, Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava. He's just telling you that it's nesmachta, that that concept exists. So even though the halacha is not like them, and we don't pass them like them completely, that it is a claim that is valid. All he's showing you is that this type of claim is a valid claim. We may not pass them like them, but the claim is valid. And if the claim is valid, that means that you can exercise that claim in a different situation. And that is basically the Rashbam is trying to bring a logic to what Rashi said. Rashi's application seems to be an inappropriate extension of the conclusion that the halacha is not like that position. The Rashbam explains, you're right. You can't logically extend it to the other thing, but it's an asmachta. Asmachta means that it shows you that such an argument exists. So Rashi says, you see that that argument exists. You may not apply it in that case, but in my case, we will apply it. And that's all he's bringing from the Braita. There's no logical extension. It's just a way to show or demonstrate that the concept exists in other places. Right now we move on to the next case. Hayichavita de Chamra, the Shtakil de Barzo. There was this Chavit of Chamra that slipped out the Beres. Now the Beres can be defined in one of two ways. The Beres can be the plug that is holding the wine in, meaning that there's already a hole there and there's a plug in the hole. Or the Beres could be the tap that's there. And so now you have a tap that's there, and the tap fell out. So you have a barrel full of wine where the plug fell out of it, or the tap fell out of it. So what's going to happen is all the wine's going to pour out. So Ata Ovin Kochavim, Idre, the Ovin Kochavim jumped up again, similar to the case before by the Etro. The Ovin Kochavim jumps up in order to save the situation. Anach Yadei Ilavei. He plugs the hole. Now over here, it's not clear what that means, whether he plugged the hole, he stuck his finger in there, or from the Pshat HaLashon, the way the Tosafot learns it is, he placed his hand, palm of his hand against the hole to stop the wine from exiting from the barrel. So Amra Papa, Kol Delahade Barza, Chamra Asir. Anything that is opposite that, either tap or hole in the barrel where he put his hand, is Asur. V'idach, and the remainder of it is shari, is mutar, and Rashi over here says shari is apishtia, is even drinkable. So Rashi says that the issue here is when he goes to put his hand or finger in there to block the hole from where the wine is exiting, kiluach hasamuch lenekev asur. The flow that's next to that hole is problematic, but it's a problematic bishtia velo behana, sheinkan shikshuch. Because Rashi explains it's impossible to do the shikshuch, because a nekev tsar, the hole is too narrow for him to do that. Veinu yachol l'shachshech. If that's the case, like Rashi said above, that when it comes to yayin, magav, the Ovid Kochavim makes it asur b'shtia, shichshuch makes it asur b'hana, or the possibility of shichshuch makes it asur b'hana. So here where there's only magav and no shichshuch, because it's impossible given the narrowness of the hole, then there's only magav Ovid Kochavim. And anything that is in contact with his hand, the kiluach, the flow that is by his hand, is what is asur, but asur b'shtia, because we're only discussing magav, the obeid kochavim. The Baal Tosafot point out that Rashi's view is only because he stuck his hand there to prevent it from exiting. But had he stuck his finger into the hole, or somehow touched the wine internally, then you would have a problem, because then it would not only be asur b'shtiyah, it would be asur b'hana'ah, because of the possibility of shikshuk in that case. And that's what the Rashbam writes, b'shem Rashi, shim tochev ha'yukhuv ha'kochavim et ha'barzeh ha'chavit, oh, not lo l'gamrei min ha'chavit, that if he takes it out the tap, or puts it in completely, or puts his finger in there, no way that he didn't do some shikshuk over there inside of the chavit. And therefore, and even if it's a great loss, the entire barrel then is asur b'shtiyah, not just the area where his hand is in contact. Now, the truth is, and the Agota Bach points this out, if there's shikshuk already, it should not only be asur b'shtiyah, it should also be asur b'hana'ah. And that is actually the view of many of the Rishonim over here, that the Isur is not just an Isur of Shtiyah, but there is an Isur Hana'ah in this case as well. The Ravid suggests that the problem here is the wine that's in that piping. When he puts his hand there, he actually pushes some of the wine back. That movement of the wine is considered to be Shikshuk, and that's what causes the Isur Hana'ah, when he pushes the wine back into the barrel. And so anything that moved with his placement of his hand to block the exit of the wine, that's what becomes a Isur Hana'ah. And the Ra'a suggests that the problem here is the wine in that channel, in the hole that is exiting, that's the stuff that he's in contact with, that's the wine that is problematic in this case. Idok Shari is rational to hear, apishtia, even to drink it, and the reason being, the Chazavar, stadim lav chibur, that things that are on the side are not considered to be attached to it, the sur kol ayayin, to make all the ayin asur. So the question here is what do we consider to be a chibur and what do we not consider to be a chibur? And so Rashi says that something coming from the side, which we're going to prove in a second from the Mishnah in Tvuyom, is not considered to be a chibur, as opposed to something at the top or the bottom where there is a din of chibur over here. The Ra'ah is going to explain that the wine in the piping is problematic because that's considered to be a separate area or separate from the wine of the barrel, and only that is a sur. The Rabbi will explain, according to his shita, that the reason is that when you push the wine back in, it's problematic. But when you have a wall hole on the side, you can always tilt the barrel over, and when you tip it over, not all of the wine will exit, because you can keep that hole on top of the barrel, and then you can keep the wine from exiting from there, so there's no automatic assumption of connection between the wine that is there and the wine that would exit from the hole. As opposed, we're going to see in a second, to a situation where the hole is at the top or the bottom, where there has to be wine that exits from there, and that have implications on the remainder of the wine. Vika de Amre, Amar Papa, there's some that say that, but Papa's view was the following. Ada barza chamra asur. Until the tap, everything is asur. V'idach, and the remainder is shari, is mutar, and again, mutar b'shtiyah. So according to the first view, anything that is just opposite the hand is problematic. In that hole, the area that's right there, whatever wine touched the hand is problematic. The rest of the barrel is fine. According to the second Lashon, when he puts his hand there, all wine in that area of the tap and above is problematic. The reason being is that if he didn't put his hand there, all that wine would flow out. So we consider as if he touched not only the wine that is up in his hand, we believe that as if he touched anything that would have naturally flowed out of that hole. And that's why it's considered to be problematic. But the remainder of it is considered to be mutar. Amar Rav Yemar. Rav Yemar says Rav Papa's psak over here is kitanae. It's similar to a machloket tanaim. Chavit shen nikva. You have a barrel that got a hole in it. Ben mipia, ben mishuleha, ben mitzideha. Whether it was at the top of the barrel. And here we're talking about an earthenware utensil that's carrying the items, because that's the way they stored it in the time of the Gemara. Later on, the Rishonim discussed their issues, which are they have barrels of wood. But in the time of the Gemara, they weren't using barrels of wood. They were using earthenware utensils to store the wine. So if there's a hole on the top, there's a hole on the side, or there's a hole on the bottom, and then a tvulyom comes and touches it, a tvulyom is a sheni l'tuma, he can make the wine tmeya. He can make it into something that is tamei by coming into contact with it. Rav Yehuda Omer, mipia umishulea tmeya, he touches the hole that is on top, he touches the hole that's on the bottom, then all the wine is tmeya. Mitzideha, he touches it on the side, Torah mikan mikan. That which is above it and that which is below it is fine. The suggestion of Rashi is that Rav Yehuda is saying what Rav Papa said, which is that when you're at the bottom of the utensil and you put your hand there, everything in the utensil is tamei, because all the wine would flow out of that hole. And therefore, if you touch it, it's as if you touched all the wine that's in there. The barrel has a hole at the top. Also over there, it's problematic, because we say that whatever you touch on the top, now everything below it becomes a basis, a base to support that which is on the top. And because it's a basis, it creates a connection between them. Then when you puncture it on the side, and so Rashi says that something coming from the side is not considered to be a chibur, as opposed to something at the top or the bottom, where there is a din of chibur over here. And for that reason, he thinks that everything above it and below it are tehorim. Similar to Rav Papa, who says that anything that is opposite that, either tap or hole in the barrel where he put his hand, is asur. And the remainder of it is mutar. And the second Lashon of Rav Papa also would be following that position of Rav Yehuda, just the fact that it's yai nesech makes it that we're more machmir than the case of Tumah. So by the case of Tumah, where it's negia mitzideha, only that area would be tamei, according to Rashi. But then, the second Lashon of Rav Papa, anything above that area also would be problematic in terms of yayin nesech, because of the chumrah of yayin nesech. And based on that, Rashi says Halacha is not like Rav Papa over here, because Rav Papa is kedat yachid, like Rav Yehuda in the Braita. It's yachid v'rabim, Halacha k'rabim. Therefore, Rav Yehuda is against the Rabbonin in the Braita. And we don't pass like Rav Yehuda, and Rav Papa is holding like Rav Yehuda, we're also not going to paskin like Rav Papa. That's Rashi's reading of this Gemara. The Baal Tosafot have a number of problems with Rashi's understanding or reading of the Gemara, including one that you raised, which is, don't you have a tarovet now? Don't you have a mixture of wine over here? How do you have half a barrel that's mutar bishtiyah, and then another half of the barrel that is asur bishtiyah? You don't have a way to segregate it and say, oh, this wine is problematic, but the other wine is mutar bishtiyah. How do you deal with it, or how do you separate between them? And therefore, the Baal Tosafot suggests, l'kein nira l'fresh, the ara baza asur, when it says that until the barza is asur, zehu behana'a. That means an isur ana, not just an isur shtia. Batam, and the reason being, kibayach niftacha nekev, nitnanea kol hayayin, shara baza letzeit. All the wine there started to move and exit der sham, ksusam yadol hanekev, nistam akol. He stopped it all. Meletzeit v'chashub kila nigna'ga bikulo. It's as if he touched all of it for that reason. V'idach shori, and the remainder is mutar bahana'a, but is asur b'shti'ah, v'pnei hayayin asur shochev alav, because there is yayin asur that's sitting above it, and it's mixed together. And that seemingly is the way that Rashi is explaining it as well, just that he has a distinction between it being only asur b'shti'ah and mutar b'shti'ah, because he writes also at a barza, kol yayin shlamala nekev asur, dekev nekulo nimshach, achar nekev letzei terach sham, Havlei chibor v'asur makes it into a connection, and therefore that chibor makes it that it is asur. Baal Tosafot say that makes it as if he's touched that whole area. So Rashi sees it as just being a chibor that makes it that the tuma moves from that area to the other areas. And Tosafot says it's as if he touched all that area because of the fact that all the wine would come out of this hole. And the Baal Tosafot also suggests that Rashi's explanation here, that Rav Papa's shita is within that of Rav Yehuda, and therefore, when halacha is not like Rav Papa, because Rav Yehuda is a yachid neged rabim, that in itself is not a proof, because we have many cases in Shas where we pass them like the yachid against the rabim. So if that's the case, then that could be the situation here as well. But rather, Rabbeinu Tam says the reason that we are not passing like Rav Papa over here is because further on we have a position of Rava which is against this position of Rav Papa. Based on a Gemara that deals with the siphon later on, when there is a discussion between Rava and Rav Papa, and it's clear that Rava does not agree with the position of Rav Papa, and if you think the cases are comparable, then Rava is paskening against Rav Papa. Rav Papa is a Talmid of Rava, and even though Rav Papa is a Batra, later Amora, so generally we would pass him like an Amora who is later, Rava also has the status of an Amora Batra. So now if you have an Amora Batra of Rava and an Amora Batra of Rav Papa, Rava is going to trump because he's the Rebbe. And that's why Rabbeinu Tam says the halacha is not like Rav Papa over here. Not because necessarily he holds like Rav Yehuda, but because of the fact that Rava doesn't hold like Rav Papa. But the Baal Tosafot go on to defend this position of Rashi and say that the halacha is not like Rav Papa because he holds like Rav Yehuda who's a Yechida. And the Rabbeinu Chananu he brings also paskins that way. And the reason that what the Rabbeinu Tam says is incorrect over here is because when you say that there's a psak like a yechidah, is when the Gemara comes out and says specifically, Halacha k'Rabbi Yehuda, despite the fact that he's a yechidah, the halacha could be like him. But here, where the Gemara makes no comment like that, then we're going to assume, yechid v'rabim, halacha k'Rabbim. There's no reason to believe that the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda over here, even though in other places in Shas, we do have a halacha like a yechid. Here, the Gemara makes no such comment. And therefore, if Rav Papa is associated with Rabbi Yehuda, the halacha is not going to be like Rav Papa, because the halacha is also not like Rabbi Yehuda, because we have no indication otherwise from the Gemara. Although it is a little strange that if you have liquid, which is a single entity, and you touch the part of it and make it tamei, how could you separate then between the part that is tamei and the part that is tahor? All of it should be tamei. And that would be easy to understand or explain when you're dealing with discrete objects. So if he's mitamei one object, then the next object is it, the maga is in contact with the first object, then you have to look as to whether the tumah can pass. But by liquid, it's one entity. How could it be that a part of it is tamei and a part of it is tahor? So the Baal Tosafot say that that is a unique aspect of a tvul yom. And that is that we have din by tvul yom, that he is a sheni the tumah, but he only makes a shlishi the tumah, a third level of tumah, bipsul. That makes it pasul, but that item can't pass the tumah on. So he only ruins that which he's in contact with. He doesn't empower that which he's in contact with to pass that tumah further on. That's what the Baal Tosafot say over here. V'yesh lomar, demashkeh ba machmat tvul yom, nifsalim ve'einan puslim. And therefore, only the yayin and the nekef in the area where the hole is tamei. But besides that, the remainder of the liquid is not considered to be tamei. Or the way the Ravid explains it is that whatever touched his hand is considered to be tamei. All right, we're stopping here, six lines down on the top of Samach Amud Aleph.